Everyone, this is Sean Ennis of the Internet Torchcast for July 6, 2007. Joining me this week is Jerry Cataline. Jerry, how's it going?
Going well, Sean. I'm juiced up for Saturday night. How's it going out your way?
It's going pretty well, man. How was your Independence Day?
I was on duty, and mercifully it was a relatively non-traumatic time, so thanks to all those folks in my area that didn't blow their hands off with firecrackers.
Yeah, no missing limbs is always a good thing in the emergency ward.
No question about it, so no issues, but looking forward to a great Saturday, no doubt about it.
I hear you. Now, are fireworks legal in New York?
I beg your pardon?
Are fireworks legal in New York? Can you get your own?
No.
Okay.
No,
that's curious. I grew up in Delaware, where they're also illegal there, and now I live in Indiana, where they are legal.
Right.
And I will say this much. If fireworks are legal in your state, you must set them off, because it is a tremendous amount of fun.
It is a moral imperative as long as you do it safely. I mean, I live out in the middle of nowhere, and we have a typical, wonderful, flat, wide-open space for fireworks, yet they are illegal to purchase in New York State. Although, you know, where I live, they're certainly available in Ontario across the border, and for my neighbors to the southern tier, you can go into Pennsylvania and get them relatively easily without the hassle of crossing a national border.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we set some off last night. It took a couple hours. We went to, got a big package, you know, from like a wholesale club for $100 bucks, and it took a couple hours to set everything off. It was great. But
there is nothing like it. It is a lot of fun as long as it's done safely. No question about it.
Yes, yes. I will add that you do have to be safe. My dad taught us when we were little to respect the fireworks, because they will blow your hands off.
Exactly. Nasty stuff.
But anyway, yes, I am also excited for Saturday night. We have the UFC 73 card coming up, stacked as it were. But first, before we get to our preview, I do want to bring up a couple of things that we've got in the news this week. First and foremost, of course, the latest in the, unfortunately, ongoing MMA steroid saga. We've got Phil Baroni testing positive for steroids. What's your take on that?
For two steroids, not one, but two steroids.
Yeah.
You know, we touched on this. We touched on this over the last 4 or 5 weeks, ever since, Gracie's steroid catch came up. And again, I think that MMA is treading the water here under the radar with their fighters using steroids. And I think it is a dangerous trend, and it is one that can certainly derail the popularity of the sport. You can see just by looking across the road at professional wrestling what it's done to the Chris Benoit tragedy and story,
yep.
Where, you know, it's still a nebulous influence to actually what happened. But as we've said over and over and over again, if you've got somebody, a legend like Hoist Gracie, who's caught using steroids, then to me that means everybody else is under suspicion. And I don't think you can get mandatory testing into the mainstream events soon enough just to deter this before it becomes more of a mainstream sport. You know, awful news for Phil Baroni. I think, you know, I saw his agent's release that, you know, we don't understand how this possibly could have happened. And, you know, I mean, you don't get veterinary supplements into your diet accidentally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the sort of thing that, you know, you head out to Applebee's or a chain restaurant and, nope, all of a sudden you have nandrolone in your system. It just doesn't work that way. And I think anybody that knows or has known a professional athlete or somebody that, not even a professional athlete, but takes their body's condition extremely seriously, their body is a temple. And they know exactly what's going into their body. I mean, it's not like Joe Corner Brawler that's, you know, popping a six-pack of Bud and a pack of smokes after he fights. These guys are trained professional athletes whose careers are based on their performance in cage or ring. And I think it's naive to suggest that, you know, well, we don't know how this possibly could have happened and, you know, the testing must be flawed. The testing isn't flawed. I mean, you're positive for two steroids. I mean, I think it's we're going to keep seeing it over and over and over and over and over again until the promotions police themselves and make it clear that this will not be tolerated.
Yeah, I agree completely with everything you said. I think you can't get the testing in soon enough. It's got to be, you've got to test everybody all the time, and it's until they do that, it's going to be a disaster waiting to happen.
Exactly.
You know, wait till a UFC champion tests positive for steroids, a la Tim Sylvia a few years ago, when MMA really wasn't under the radar at all.
Right.
But now that it's even slightly under the radar, you know, if you get a Randy Couture, and obviously I'm not saying Couture's on steroids, he's been tested multiple times being in all those main events, but someone of his caliber,
right,
testing positive for steroids, it'd be a disaster.
It would be an absolute disaster. I mean, look at this card coming up we have on Saturday. I mean, there's a lot of known names to the casual fan that are fighting on this card Saturday night. And all it takes is a brilliant card that gets a lot of buzz, maybe a title changes hands, maybe two, some fantastic fights, which certainly there's the potential for. And all you need to blow that buzz is one of these guys that you know testing positive for steroids, or in Bonner's case, again. And
yeah.
I think it's a disaster waiting to happen. And, you know, we're in the premature stage of it right now, where, you know, changes can be made. The organizations have enough control right now that if you want to fight in the mainstream promotions, testing should be mandatory.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, mixed martial arts as a mainstream sport in this country can't afford any backward steps like that.
Yeah, I agree.
We're going to be talking about it'll be somebody else. And, you know, when we have another podcast in a week or two, it'll be somebody else. And
yeah.
I just have a feeling this is going to be a recurring theme that, you know, well, come on, you'll do the intro. Hey, did you hear so-and-so tested for steroids? Yes, we did. And, you know,
yeah,
it'll be kind of like our repeat button over and over again. And it's a shame.
Yeah, that's
it shouldn't
you
be.
Know, and it boggles the mind with a guy like Baroni, who knew he was going to be in the main event, knew he was going to get tested.
Know.
You know, and how you, I agree with you that you just don't get steroids into your system and not know it. As a professional athlete, that just doesn't happen. I just can't imagine a scenario in which that's happening. I can't imagine a guy like Phil Baroni. Phil Baroni's a smart guy.
Right.
He's not going to, someone's not going to hand him a pill and say, here, take this, it's a supplement, here, it's good stuff, and
yeah,
he just blindly, you know, takes it.
Right. No, of course not. I mean, it's naive. I mean, and it's to the point where, you know, they're doing the same thing over and over again. Yet these fighters are making the same mistake over and over again, where at least in, for example, baseball, where there's been a humongous issue, most players who are supplementing have moved away from steroids and have moved to things that are not easily to test, like HGH.
Yeah.
And these guys keep stubbing their toe on the same thing. And I'm not advocating supplementation, of course, but I'm saying this is a dead horse. I mean, you know, it's not a good story. It's not a good story. It's, you know, and it's something that, again, it's a shame that we end up leading with this on the eve of what is easily the best card of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and yet, there it is.
Yep. It's something that they definitely have to fix it. And, you know, it's going to be part of my MMA manifesto as it goes on, that this is one of the things that the UFC is going to have to pilot. You know, they're going to have to set the trend with a lot of these things, because, you know, you want to do it yourself before you're made to do it.
Exactly.
With this and a lot of other things. So,
exactly.
You know, it's really in their best interest to really start pushing this.
They have nothing to lose. I mean,
Actually,
they have nothing to lose by policing it themselves. They have everything to lose by having someone police it for them.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, blah, you know, freaking
yeah,
what can you say? I mean, terrible, just an awful story. No fun.
Yep.
Not altogether unsurprising, though, truthfully. But
very true.
You know.
Very true.
Blah. Anywho.
Yeah. I do want to look at, real quick, before we get into, obviously, 73, the next couple of cards are also, I mean, this one is called Stacked, but the next two cards are really starting to look fantastic. I mean, you've got another fight that's rumored to be going down at 75 in September in England is now Marcus Davis versus Paul Taylor, which is one that was supposed to happen at 72 and didn't, and that's now back on for UFC 75, which I was very excited to see that one at 72. I'm excited to see it back on the card now.
Right. I agree. I think that was the fight that really would have made that card have a little more pop. It was good to see Davis get over, no question about it. But I think this is the fight it was one of the fights that you really don't want to see on a pay card. That is an overmatched kind of feeder match. You know, on the free cards, on the spike shows, no issue. But you know, not on the one where you lay out the $40. I think if you look ahead, you know, I mean, the next event, Respect, in August. You know, you have the heavyweight championship. You got, you know, GSP and Josh Koscheck going at it. Joe Stevenson's on the card. Kendall Grove's on the card. You know, Babalu Sobral's on the card. I mean, you know, I mean, it just doesn't stop. And, you know, you made a good point in your manifesto where they're really putting a product out there that is, it's product recognition is really what it is. And, you know, if you've been a fan for a year, or 8 months, or 18 months of the UFC, all of a sudden, you're recognizing these guys. You know, on the card, all of a sudden the card looks a lot better. I mean, as opposed to a card where it's tough to fork out the 220s for eight fights that you may not know anybody.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of the Ultimate Fighter and the brilliance of, you know, the undercard, really.
Yep.
I mean, you've got guys like George St. Pierre, who worked his way up. You've got guys like Kurt Pellegrino, who, you know, started in the welterweight division, then went down to lightweight, and all of a sudden is putting on really exciting fights. David Heath, who was undefeated for a while, then got to, you know, then fought Lyoto Machida and was beaten, but still an exciting fighter. You got Travis Luter, who was a winner of the Ultimate Fighter, who didn't make weight. Now he's coming back to make his return. Kendall Grove, Ultimate Fighter winner, who's got a tremendous amount of hype following him, you know, coming to take on Cote, and possibly, if this one goes down, I will be very happy. Diego Sanchez and Hayato Sakurai, which would just be, it would just be tremendous.
What a battle that would be.
It'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Of course, there was the rumor earlier this week that Sanchez was going to fight BJ Penn in August, but that seems to be all but shot down at this point.
Penn's camp, I think, quashed that rumor right then and there. I had seen the Sanchez-Sakurai matchup listed in a couple places, so I think that's probably what's going to go down. What a great entry match for Sakurai.
I mean,
you've got a certainly you should have a hungry Diego Sanchez after that showing against Koscheck. You know, Sakurai will have his hands full, but I think, stylistically, it's a great matchup.
Yep. So that's what we've got down, coming down the road.
Great summer. Straight summer.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just great stuff coming up.
Yep.
Just trying to remember. I think that's all I had in my notes to start off, but I think that was about pretty much it. It's a pretty slow week as far as news goes. You know, we pretty much just got the big event this weekend coming up and not much else going on. Although, I will say this, we did get Daniel Pewter on Bodog this week. I haven't seen it yet. It's on my DVR. What was your take on Pewter's 44 seconds?
Pewter looks like the real deal. I mean, as I pointed out in my column, I think the Bodog production has gotten a lot better. I mean, it's just a lot more easy to watch. It's just done. It's interesting in contrast to the Fight Girls show, which is another topic entirely that I don't think I want to get into on this podcast, but as somebody who's been trying to follow women's MMA, a show like that does not help the cause in picking out the fighters any easier. But, you know, Bodog has come a long way, and the way they presented it, they hype both fighters nicely to set the stage before their fight, even if you've never heard of the guys before. Pewter, who, you know, has a name and history, you might say, is a outstanding talker on the mic. I mean, he was just gold in his pre-fight hype, just gold. You know, the guy he was fighting, you know, looked like a corn cob from, you know, somewhere in the Midwest. And I mean, it was bizarre to watch him walk down the strip into the ring, which you're walking, you know, essentially on this Costa Rican beach to this ring surrounded by what are essentially Maxim models and Calvinair and fellow fighters. I mean, that's basically it. That's all that's there. And he walks down the ring in this straw hat and these overalls with one unhooked. And if he had a pitchfork, I swear to God, it would have been right out of Deliverance. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, and I wrote in my column, who's the professional wrestler here? Because it was ridiculous. Now, Pewter walks in, and he looks like a real fighter. I mean, he looks like he was channeling Tito Ortiz, but he looks like the real deal. I mean, he's the right size. He's cut. He's active. He's quick. Strong hands. I mean, the guy who's fighting, you know, was the prototypical tomato can, and he took care of him in short order. But I'd like to see Poudre improve against, you know, step up the level of competition a little bit, whether it's in Bodog or elsewhere, and see what he can do, because he looks like, and he fights like, he's got real skills. Plus, he has that entertainment it factor that would take him over the top as a entertainment celebrity. I was impressed with him more what he did out of the ring than he did in the ring. That's largely because of the competition he was facing.
Yeah. For those that aren't familiar, Poudre is he was formerly in the WWE, was a winner of the Tough Enough show, which is which was WWE's version of the Ultimate Fighter, so to say. He was in there for a while, was in developmental territories for a little while, and actually at one point on the big show got Kurt Angle in a Kimura and pissed him off royally. It was supposed to be a showcase for Angle to beat down these new guys.
Right.
Poudre gets him in a Kimura and hurts him.
But the
Angle's
ref
not pleased.
But as I point out, the WWE ref that was in the ring, you know, tapped three against Poudre, which I thought was a tremendous piece of ad hoc officiating by the referee, because you could just see Poudre cranking Angle's right arm back, and as they leaned over, you know, Poudre was in bottom position, and the referee just gets down and whap, 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 and the bell rings, and they break up the hold, and Angle is just livid, and it's one of the great moments in live TV that at the time I didn't realize, I had no idea of the intricacy of the situation, you know, I mean, because I was just, you know, some new wrestling follower, but, you know, and looking back at it in retrospect, it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, for Poudre to go out there, and for all the world, it looks like a shoot wrestling match, which I suspect it was.
Yeah.
And then to have the referee get Angle's line over anyway, despite the fact he's about to have his shoulder torn out of his socket, it was just brilliant.
So that kind of
helped Poudre on his way out of the WWE, I suspect.
Oh yeah, and the funniest thing about that was afterwards when the crowd must have been confused when Angle got in his face and was having some choice words for him, you know, after the match was over.
It's just, you know, because it's like, you know, I mean. Because, I mean, to the mark, you're looking at it going, well, geez, you just beat him, and now you're going to talk him out and, you know, whatnot. But, I mean, it looked too serious when you were doing it. And, like I say, in retrospect, it's hilarious. At the time, it was funny, but not quite to the extent that I understood it as well as I do today.
Yeah, exactly.
But, anyway, I think Poudre's got huge upside. I almost wish, you know, and this is the problem with having one big dog organization, is that you don't want to see him stay on Ion TV for the rest of his life. So I think he's going to improve, you know, and it's like, you know, I have a hard time seeing the Bodog promotion get anywhere else at this point. I kind of agreed with what you said in your manifesto. It's tough to look at a guy like Calvin Ayer and believe the promotion's going to get any further ahead than it already is. I think they need to take that next step, because I think they're doing the right thing and they're marketing it to the right people and they're doing it the right way.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure they can take that next step with either him in charge or the current way they're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be an interesting situation for them to see what actually, if they attempt to do more than that, or if they're just satisfied to stay where they are. And, you know, I think it's important, and this will come up later too, it's important to have these places where the young guys can develop so they don't get thrown to the dogs immediately in the UFC. Get all this hype behind them, and they get one loss, and they're finished.
Right.
But you know, it's there's got to be some more structure in mixed martial arts.
Yep. I think it's coming. I think you're gonna see that. It's gonna be a little while for that to establish itself.
Yeah.
I agree. It needs more structure. Is an excellent word.
Yeah. So okay. All that aside. That's future column information. And if you want to read the manifesto, I do have part one up right now. That's concerning market saturation. It's on the main site. And coming up, we'll have more on that after the two lay of the land comms, they'll probably do after UFC 73. Anyway, speaking of UFC 73, let's get to the preview. Our first fight, and I'm looking at your written column as I'm doing this here.
Attaboy.
We've got Mark Bocek versus Frankie Edgar.
Yep.
And your take on this one?
I think this is going to be better than advertised, depending on essentially one big thing. I think it really depends on how well Bocek comes out in his UFC debut. I think it's well documented the effect that getting onto the big stage has on guys. Edgar is a pretty known quantity now after his win against Huerta. But I think what put Edgar over that fight was he wasn't intimidated. He came out confident. He looked confident. He looked like he belonged. He fought the fight he wanted to. He was able to counteract Huerta's takedowns pretty well through the entire fight. Even when he did, he defended well, showed a good stand-up game, kept Huerta off balance, and really up until the last 8 seconds of the fight, really wasn't in a ton of danger at any point until using that knee bar that he ended up gutting out, which was a tremendous display of heart.
Yeah.
Bocek has the skills, I suspect, especially with his jiu-jitsu, to give Edgar some issues. The question is, again, is he going to be kind of the deer in the headlights? If he is, Edgar's going to roll all over him. If he isn't, I think Edgar's still going to win, but I think it's going to be a little tougher road. I think that Bocek presents some of the same problems that Huerta did, but not quite on Huerta's level.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to go Edgar's way. Just when it's going to end is difficult to say. I think Bosek's going to come out and put on a good show, but I think Edgar's going to do enough to get the unanimous decision.
Yeah, I've also got Edgar winning this one. You're thinking of Tyson Griffin, by the way, instead of
Huerta. Sorry, Tyson Griffin. My bad.
I've
got cover boys on the mind here, Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, I hear you.
Don't mind me.
And, I also see this going Edgar's way. Bocek is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but is unproven in stand-up as far as that goes. But Edgar, proved that when you're beating Tyson Griffin in the decision, you're a well-rounded fighter because Griffin is he's a tremendous fighter and, can beat you pretty much anywhere.
Right.
And Edgar hung with him for all three rounds. And just the ending to that fight was fantastic. I think besides beating Tyson Griffin, who was undefeated at the time, hanging on for that through that knee bar for 20 seconds really cemented his just an outstanding debut for him.
Yep.
And giving him an immediate higher status. Now, of course, he is relegated to the undercard here again, but that's okay. The guy he had six fights.
Right.
So
it's your second UFC fight. I mean,
yeah.
And you're on the pay-per-view card. You're not even on one of the free shows, so you're stepping up.
Yeah. Yeah, so given some time, I think Edgar could be something very special. And then, the lightweight division is so wide open right now. It could even be sooner rather than later.
Exactly.
I do have Edgar by unanimous decision, if I can get it out. And I do think that he'll be able to counteract Bocek's jiu-jitsu game with a stand-up. Take down the fence with wrestling if possible or if necessary, and it should be a good fight. We'll see.
I agree.
We'll see how it goes.
Yep, I think this is one that if it goes as I think it might go, and Bosa comes out and puts on a good show, this is one we'll catch later in the card.
Yeah. Coming up next, we have Jason Gilliam, who is the second replacement for the original Jeff Joslin. Who was then replaced by Drew Fickett, and now he's being replaced by Jason Gilliam, taking on Chris Lytle.
No one wants to fight Chris Lytle. They're all ducking him.
I'm blaming him. if that were the case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lytle brings a lot to the table. I thought that, honestly, he put on a pretty good show against Matt Hughes in the his loss to him, as long as I have my opponents right now. I think... Lytle's last two losses have been to the guys who are going to fight for the welterweight title, so that's not a bad resume. All things considered, he doesn't really. I mean, he's not an exciting fighter. I don't think I wouldn't consider him to watch. I mean, he's effective. He's certainly got plenty of ground game, plenty of skills, knows his way around. He's plenty experienced. He's going to present a problem for Gilliam, who I believe is moving up in weight to take this fight. Which
yes.
you know, it just goes to show you how much something like this can help your career by, you know, taking one for the team, which I suspect Jason's going to. Although he's got a pretty gaudy 9-1 record, too. But I suspect that Lytle's going to get this one where he wants it, which I suspect is on the ground, and, you know, work out the win from there. Gilliam should give him a decent go. I don't think it's going to be a complete walkover, but I think that Lytle's going to have a little too much weight and a little too much strength, and he'll be able to, you know, dictate the pace of this fight.
Yeah, I'm seeing Lytle taking a ground-and-pound victory here in the second or so. Gilliam, you know, Gilliam's a good fighter, but he's, like you said, he's stepping up in weight. This is a second shot in the UFC. He lost to Jamie Varner at lightweight.
The worm.
The worm. And Gilliam's the gizzard.
Yep, the gizzard. What a great fight.
Yeah, and he'll be taking on Lytle. And Lytle is a guy where, even when people beat him, they very rarely look good in doing
so.
You know, like
well, the
you
Hughes
said,
fight
put
was
on
a good example. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Hughes didn't look good at all in that fight.
No.
And truthfully, when he lost to Sarah didn't look that good either.
No. That's the whole thing. That was
bad.
Yeah, you know, the Sarah fight with Lytle was a big reason why he went into that St. Pierre fight such a huge underdog. He would have been a big underdog anyway, but he did not look good against Lytle by any stretch,
right?
And I think that contributed to the enormity of that upset. But
absolutely.
Yeah, Lytle's probably going to win this one on the ground. I would say probably in the second round, which is about what you had as well.
Yep.
Next up, we've got George Grizel and Diego Saraiva.
You know, I'm looking forward to seeing Georgie fight. You know, I distinctly recall him having the knee issues back in The Ultimate Fighter. You know, and I think we've all probably seen him at one point or another in Rich Franklin's corner. He seems to fight with a lot of energy. It'll be good to see him healthy. Saraiva, I think, is going to be in for it tonight, because I think this is George's welcome back to the UFC sort of fight, and, you know, kind of a get-well sort of fight, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, Saraiva kind of brings the same game as Georgie does, but I think that Grizel will wear him down, and I think he's just better all around. I would go with Grizel here. I think I had him as a third-round TKO victory, but I could see it go the distance in the decision. I think you're going to see a lot of ground fighting, and I think Grizel will dominate the whole way.
Yeah, for me, this is a very tough fight to call, if only because, you know, we've seen Grizel twice in the UFC, once against Mark Hominick, where he lost the decision, and once against Danny Abadi, who has no business in the UFC.
Yeah.
you know, and, you know, it's just tough to say what Grizel brings to the table. I mean, at least from as far as observation, you know, we know Grizel's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. We know he's Rich Franklin's jiu-jitsu trainer. He's, by all accounts, an excellent corner man. But as far as seeing him fight, I have not seen a whole lot of him besides those two fights, and I don't think those two fights are very representative of what he can do, especially given the fact that he just had, you know, the knee tendon replacements from a cadaver, so maybe he's got some bionic tendons now. I don't know.
I think it's the confidence in the knee, though. I think it's the confidence in the knee that he was lacking before. I mean, the tendon replacement is great, but after time, you get to the point where you can actually work on that knee again, trust it, rely on it to support you. And I think that's huge. And he's got a couple fights under his belt with it already. So I think, you know, I like him here.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
Are you leaning towards Saraiva?
No, I do have Grizel on this one. The only reason it's tough for me to say how it's going to end, I think. Just because, you know, with Saraiva, I can't remember how to say his name. But he comes in, you know, he was a late replacement against Dustin Hazlett a little while ago and lost the decision at that one. So it's tough to say what he even brings to the table. But I think it's a lot of the same, or it's a similar game as Grizel. And Grizel, by all accounts, is a very good Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. And, you know, there's no slouch on the feet either. So I'm seeing Grizel getting he gets a decision. Possibly finishes him. I'm going to call it a decision at this point, but you know, honestly, no idea how this one's going to end. So I'm
going
to go with the decision to be safe.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Let's look at the next fight, which is interesting to me anyway, is Stephen Bonner returning from his steroid suspension, taking on Mike Nichols.
Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating one. This is a must-win for Bonner. I don't see any way how he's still in the UFC if he loses this fight. You know, he has not looked good since the first Griffin fight. He looks like a guy that really should be more dominant than he actually is. And I'm not sure how I can explain it besides that. But, you know, he seems to have enough tools to be able to dominate opponents and have the advantage over most of his opponents, but it just never seems to click for him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what Mike Nichols is going to bring to the table here. I think this is a big fight for him in that he's being brought in. He certainly has some skills as a grappler, jiu-jitsu sort of guy. I'm wondering if Bonner is just going to be content to pick away or if he's going to feel the pressure to get a big win here. I think if he does feel that pressure to push Nichols, I think he might wind up in more trouble than he wants.
Yeah.
To get the win, I think he may have to be more cautious, use his advantage in the stand-up game, and just sort of pick away at Nichols until he feels comfortable doing something else. But I could see Bonner feeling the pressure and making a mistake and Nichols capitalizing on it. I don't feel confident enough to put it in the prediction contest, but I don't think it's outlandish to suggest that Nichols pulls off a submission here. I think in my column, I have waffled the other way and gone with Bonner by decision because I think that's what will happen. You know, when I post my soon-to-be championship winning, you know, playing with money picks on Randy Rowell's forum, I'll probably have a little fake coin thrown at the tattooed one, Mike Nichols.
Yeah, it's. I would say it's definitely a good, if you're a gambling man, Nichols is a guy to go with. I'm absolutely 100% with you on this. I think Bonner, I mean, he's
got
to win this fight. You know, I don't see Bonner finishing. He doesn't have really the knockout power to finish Nichols. And Nichols is a sneaky guy on the ground. So, you know, if Bonner is content to stand up and outpoint him, you know, avoid the takedowns or at least play it safe on the ground, you know, I think he can hang in there and get the decision. If he tries to get into a grappling match with Nichols, he may still win, but he could very well get caught.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that you made a point about Bonner not having the finishing power, which is odd to look at him. Now, if you look at a guy, he looks big enough that he should have finishing power one way or the other, you know, either on his feet or on the ground. Now, granted, he may not have, you know, dynamo knockout hands, but still enough that he lands a few blows, you're going to sleep. And it just doesn't seem like he's got that pop. And it puzzles me. Stephon Bonner is one of those guys that surely looked like he was on the short track to, you know, an elite ranking, and he's just kind of fizzled out. And whether that's because Griffin's got his number is hard to say, but he just does not look good. Even when he wins, he just doesn't look good.
Yeah, he had that fight with Sam Holger that very well could have gone to Holger.
Yep.
He had a fight with Keith Jardine that I thought should have gone to Jardine.
Could have gone the other way, yep.
You know, he's got the two decision losses with the Griffin, it's a puzzling situation for Bonner because he does have the submission win over James Irvin,
yep.
Which, you know, Irvin is obviously not known for his groundwork with good reason. You know, he's a guy that, you know,
he's
a puzzling case.
He's coming off the steroid suspension. He's got to win. I mean, he's just got to win.
Yeah,
If he loses, he's done. I mean, he's at least done in the UFC for now.
Yeah.
And maybe he catches on somewhere else and tries to rebuild. But if he drops this fight, he's done. I would imagine there's got to be a huge amount. You're going to see a desperate Stephon Bonner Saturday night. And we'll see how disciplined he is. I mean, he's got to win this fight. And, you know, it's funny because the UFC's put him in there against a guy that he really you really can't be too aggressive with Mike Nichols. I mean, you can, but you got to be cautious. And what a situation to be in. I mean, holy moly.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, this is Bonner's first fight in 11 months.
Yeah.
10 months, 11 months, or
since,
some such.
Since the Les Griffin fight.
Oh, I mean, coming into the biggest fight of your life with ring rust, a steroid accusation, and suspension hanging over your head against a guy who's long and lanky and could submit you. Yuck.
Yeah. I mean, Nichols, and it's dangerous because Nichols is largely an unknown commodity.
He is. I mean, he is, but he's got the, you know, and he's got that. I mean, he's got that look to him. He's got that laid back kind of. I'm gonna suck you in and submit you. Look, I mean, Mike Nichols is not gonna knock you out, but he is gonna put you in a Kimura. You know.
Yeah.
And he'll catch you. He'll catch you. He'll sweep you, get your back, and choke you out. Tough spot for Stephan Bonner. I'm gonna stick with him for the prediction contest. I'm getting a decision here because I think the need to win is gonna override everything else for him. This is a guy that was on top of the world in one of the seminal fights of modern MMA.
Yeah.
And it's not that far away. MMA is one of those things where, you know, you string a win or two together. It only takes, you know, a couple moments in time to get you back to where you were.
Yep. And, the one thing he does have in his favor is he usually does put on a pretty entertaining fight. And that's something that promoters can appreciate. So, you know, and that goes to his advantage in this one, too, because if he can keep it standing, by all accounts, he'll probably just pick Mike Nichols apart on the feet. If by chance he gets him on the ground and gets him out of position, he has the possibility to pound him out, but we haven't really seen any grounded pound from Stephan Bonner. I don't know.
Not at all.
You know, I mean, anybody has that, anybody that can get a guy on the ground and pound on him really has that ability to stop a fight in that manner, but I don't know if it happens here.
I don't think it will.
I've also got Bonner by decision.
I think that's the safe pick, honestly. I think it's the real pick. I think if you want to if you want to dance a little bit, I think you're going to go with Nichols by submission.
Yeah.
I think it's one or the other. I don't think you're going to see. I don't think you're going to see a flash knockout here. Yeah. I don't think you're going to see a ground and pound victory for either guy. I think you're looking at Bonner by decision, or you're looking at Nichols by submission because Bonner makes a mistake.
Yeah, I agree. Although the crazier things have happened even this year.
True.
And that's probably what we're looking at. okay, next fight. We've got Heath Herring taking on Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, who is the number 2 MMA Torch ranked heavyweight. And this is a puzzling fight for me. It's the third time they've fought. Go ahead and give us your analysis on this one.
I don't know why they're fighting. I don't see the point of this. I really don't. Why would you bring Herring 2 fights ago was your shiny new recruit from Pride? And, you know, he lost the snoozer to Jake O'Brien in a match he should have been better prepared for. Had a pretty decent win over Brad Imes. And now you're going to put him in against your newest shiny heavyweight recruit, who just happens to be the very best heavyweight in the world, not named Fedor.
Yeah.
I just don't see the point. I mean, if Nog squashes him, which he probably should because he's done it twice before, what's that do for Herring? I mean, what are you going to do? The guy's 1-2. He's had his 3 fights. What are you going to do with this guy? You know, I just don't understand. I don't understand the mentality of putting Herring up there against Big Nog. I'm not one for feeder fights on a pay-per-view card. Having said that, when you got somebody like Big Nog, and let's say Nogueira loses. Let's say Herring breaks the string. Nog gets a little jittery in the cage, although I don't expect that to happen whatsoever. But, you know, Herring finds a way to land a few shots and win the fight. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Then what?
Yeah.
You know, then what? I mean, I think this just creates problems. I don't think it's a, you know, I just don't see the upside to this fight. I just don't. They've already fought twice. You know, Nogueira's had 2 pretty convincing wins already over Herring and Pride. I don't see what Herring has to offer Nogueira in terms of a new wrinkle.
Yeah.
I think this one's going to go, you know, Nogueira, this one will go down to the ground eventually because that's where it'll end up. I think Nogueira's, you know, fight style is tailor-made for the cage. And I think Nogueira's going to be a dominant force in the cage because I just think, you know, the way he wants to fight, the way he wants to fight on the ground, he's got numerous submission skills. He's very comfortable fighting on his back. He's very happy to pull guard. And this is a lousy fight for Herring style wise, which has already been proven twice.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me, this fight. I have Minotauro by submission in the first round. If Herring stays away and doesn't get caught into, you know, a ground game with Nogueira, it might go two. But yeah, I see Herring getting submitted in the first round.
Yeah, the problem for Herring in this fight is that Nogueira can beat him in any phase of the game.
Right.
Nogueira's got excellent stand-up, underrated stand-up, and of course he's, you know, fantastic on the ground. But I just, who would you have Nogueira fight in his debut? Give me a couple of names who you would rather see him fight.
Let's take. You got to give him somebody who's in the mix, but isn't too far up the ladder just yet. So I think you got to look at somebody down the road a little bit. Too bad Brandon Vera isn't in the mix yet. Why not somebody like Fabricio Werdum?
Yep.
Why not somebody like, I would have rather seen him come out against Tim Sylvia.
Yeah.
Truthfully. I mean, if you're going to throw him in there against, one of your name guys, I would have rather seen him go in there against Tim Sylvia and get that fight out of the way.
Yeah.
Because Sylvia's going to kind of limp up the ladder again. And, I don't think he's on a level of, I don't see how he's going to beat Randy Couture again. I don't see how he beats Gabriel Gonzaga. I don't see how he beats, I'm not sure how he beats Andrei Arlovski again, necessarily.
Yeah.
I would have rather seen him in there against Sylvia, against a Werdum. A little too soon for Arlovski, perhaps. If you're going to put him in there against a name guy like that, like a Herring, because like I say, you're just wasting Herring.
Yep.
I mean, Herring.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
a personality. I mean,
yeah.
He's a personality.
Yeah, Herring is a marketable fighter. He's a guy. He's an exciting fighter. He's a guy who could have had, or could. I mean, he could still have some good fights in the UFC. And for the record, Nogueira did beat Werdum last year, but this is.
Well, I mean, on the UFC stage.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I understand. Well, he's beaten Herring twice.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
For the UFC viewer, like I said, I expect this to be, I would expect the numbers on this card to be huge.
Yeah.
It's a July weekend with a loaded card. This is his debut. I would expect, if he's fought somebody before in Pride where the casual UFC fan has never seen that fight, having him fight Herring from that perspective is irrelevant.
Yeah.
But, it doesn't counter the argument that you could put him in, put him in there against Werdum. Because what are you gonna do with Werdum?
Yeah.
You got a lot of heavyweights in limbo right now. I mean, I think everyone's kind of waiting for Gonzaga to win the title. But what if he doesn't?
Yeah, you're right.
And yet Sylvia barking for a rematch. Arlovski's, kind of coming up the way. You're starting to get a logjam at heavyweight. And now you got the number two guy in the world that's just, he's become the new guy in the room. And you have the 800-pound gorilla in Fedor who knows where Fedor is. In terms of is he going to sign, isn't he going to sign, what's going to happen? So I think it's a logjam right now, but I think to toss fighters, like I say, if Herring wins, you've just spoiled your number two guy. I don't think he will.
Yeah.
I think he's a long shot to win. But so is Houston Alexander.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is Matt Serra.
Yeah.
So is Sokaju. So, he's got a puncher's chance.
Yeah.
Barely. So is Gonzaga against Krokop. I mean, when we look at Pride fighters that have come over for their UFC debut, in general, they have not done well.
Yeah. And, my thing with this fight is you've got any number of gatekeepers, any number of veterans that you can throw in there with Nogueira. You could give him Jake O'Brien. Give him the guy that beat Herring. And then you've still, O'Brien's undefeated. He's got some kind of street cred for beating Herring, but he's still not. He wouldn't be anywhere near up to the task of beating Nogueira, because he wouldn't be able to do to Nogueira what he did to Herring.
Do you really think they've given up on Herring? I mean, I almost see this as
I don't know.
They've given up on Herring.
I almost see
that as a sign they've given up on Herring.
I really hope they haven't, but it does. That's what it indicates to me that they've given up on him. That they maybe are giving him this. They deal in 3-fight contracts. Maybe they're. Give him this one so that he has a loss, so they have a reason to let him go. Maybe they're just trying to pay him less. I don't know. But I don't get it either way. I mean, Herring's a marketable fighter. He's a guy that could make them a lot of money. So I don't see why they're doing this fight. I mean, you've got a guy like, you could even give him Brandon Vera. Give him an up-and-comer. Give him, an Eddie Sanchez type. There's
yeah.
nothing wrong with having somebody play Eddie Sanchez to his Mirko Krokop.
Right. No, there isn't. There really, no. First fight, like I say, on a card that's so loaded, having one feeder fight like this
yeah.
isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And even on any card, I think, for Nogueira to get a showcase fight would be a good thing.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he'll get a showcase fight against Herring, but that's kind of a double-edged sword.
Right.
You know, because you're killing Herring.
You're killing I think I look at this as they've given up on Herring.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, unless Herring, you know, comes up with a surprise knockout win, you know, Herring's going to be cut loose.
Yeah.
That's what I read.
It's too bad.
I think it is.
It makes you wonder if there's something else involved here, if there's some kind of politics involved, or if there's, you know, which would be a shame if it is, because you don't want to see that kind of thing diminish fights. But
the more you look at the UFC, the more it kind of has that WWE atmosphere around it sometimes.
Yeah.
And this is just screaming, you know. You haven't been what we expected of you. We're going to feed you to Minotauro and, you know, go fight for Elite XC.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of giving Herring someone that he can, you know.
Showcase against, yeah.
Yeah, someone that he can either.
In retrospect,
yeah.
O'Brien was a horrible matchup for him.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a horrible matchup for him. But, I mean,
yeah.
how many free-swinging heavyweights are there? You know, the guys are just going to go out and throw. I mean, Paul Buentello, who doesn't fight in the UFC anymore.
Yeah.
You know, guys will go out there and throw punches. I mean, there aren't any, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Arlovski used to be. Sylvia used to be. Couture's never been a banger. I mean,
yes.
Gonzaga is, you know, had that huge win by KO, but he's a ground-and-pound guy. Who's going to stand and throw with Heath Herring? Realistically.
Yeah, it's a legitimate question. I don't know.
He's almost got an outdated style for the heavyweight division in the UFC.
Yeah, I mean he is good on the ground, but he's not at that elite level that Nogueira's at. You know, but it's unfair to compare anybody with Nogueira, really, besides Fedor.
True.
I mean, it's just
step down.
That's just the way it is.
Couture, Gonzaga, are any of these guys going to lose to Herring on the ground? No.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Very true.
You know, I mean, Herring's a banger, or he wants to be
a
banger. I mean, yes, you can fight on the ground because you have to nowadays, but...
Yeah.
He's in a tough spot. Herring's in a tough spot. I mean, he's going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat to keep a contract.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Good.
If he puts on an exciting fight, and, you know, in all seriousness, the first fight with Nogueira and Herring was actually a pretty entertaining fight.
Mm-hmm.
If it's that fight again, then Herring maybe he'll stay with UFC. I don't know, but... He's got to at least put in a showing. If he gets killed here, then he's done.
Oh, if he gets run over, he's done, no doubt.
Yeah.
I still have Nogueira first round submission. Nogueira sounds ready for this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Nogueira. He's focused for sure. He's going to be coming in there. There's not going to be any jitters for Nogueira. He's a pro. I've got him by. It's tough to say because I think he'll set up whatever he does with his strikes. To begin with, either force Herring to go for a takedown and then punish him, or you know, beat him up a little bit and then take him down and pound him out or submit him.
Yeah.
But you're probably right. The fight will probably be won ultimately on the ground. I think maybe a second round submission for Nogueira, but set up with a lot of strikes.
Yep.
Is the way I see it going. But it's intriguing on that level just to see if Herring can put in a good showing. If he does, I hope he does because it could be an entertaining fight. But I don't see how he has any chance whatsoever of winning.
I don't either. And I think is the Florian fight going to be first or this one? You think?
This one I think is scheduled to open the card. The Florian fight I believe is a swing match.
Okay.
But let's talk about that one next. We've got Florian against Alvin Robinson.
Alvin Robinson is one of these guys that, again, unless you're a Ring of Fire, you know, stalwart and, you know their fighters very well, you might not know who this guy is. He is 8-1. He's been dominant in the Ring of Fire promotion. Wins by submission. The problem is he's going in against Kenny Florian, who, as far as I'm concerned, looks like a top 10 lightweight to me.
Yeah.
I mean, He looks good.
Yeah,
I thought his win against Mishima was very, very good. You know, Mishima is a real fighter. I mean, he has been around. And yep. I thought Kenny maybe didn't dominate him, but he won the fight convincingly.
Yeah.
I don't know what to expect from Robinson. You know, he's got a great resume. The question is, can he step up to Florian? And that's a tall order for a lot of guys in the lightweight division. You know, that's no small task.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, Florian's been in there with, you know, the current lightweight champ. He's on a little bit of a roll. You know, the only guys Florian's lost to in the UFC was Diego Sanchez, you know, at a higher weight.
Yep.
And the guy that's holding the belt, Sean Sherk. So,
yep.
I hate picking these kind of fights because I just have not been able to find much on Robinson. From what
yeah.
I've seen, he's looked good against the clips I've seen against what looks like to me overmatched competition.
Sure.
I think he's going to put on a good show. I think, and this is this kind of go back into the Heath Herring routine that Robinson, if Robinson can come in, shake off the headlights, and put on a good show against Florian, because Florian's going to bring it, because I'm sure he's thinking, you know, this is another fight to get him to be a contender. You know, Robinson will be invited back. I think Kenny's got too much, though, to lose. And unless this guy, unless Alvin Robinson is an elite fighter that is really under the radar, you know, I see Florian picking this one up in a round two submission.
Yeah, by all indications, Robinson's got a submission game. You know, he's won all his fights by submission. And... You know, I'm with you, though. I think Florian wins this one in the second by sub. You know, obviously it's hard to say not having seen a whole lot of Robinson, and even what you've seen of Robinson is not really a very good indicator because it's not against high-level competition.
Exactly.
But, you know, all you got to say is Houston Alexander, Joe Lozon, you know.
Yep.
Who knows?
Yep.
You know,
yep.
it's another unknown commodity. So,
yep.
You know, you got to go with Florian, but at the same time, anything can happen, you know. Florian, I really want to see, you know, I'm all for getting kind of a couple of rebound fights or, you know, one or two after a loss for a title. But I really want to see what Florian can do in there with a guy like Joe Stevenson or Kurt Pellegrino or, you know, one of the upper mid guys.
Yep.
You know, he took Sean Sherk 5 rounds, which is impressive in itself because he got the crap beaten out of him for most of that fight.
Yep.
You know, this is a good transition fight for Florian, and I think he'll win this one.
Yep, I agree. I think the next step for Florian is to get kind of in a fight for a, you know, top three sort of guy in the UFC.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's next if he gets past Robinson. Can't afford any missteps though. He's got to win this fight. He's got to come out focused. From what I've seen in his previous fights, that does not seem to be the issue. I think Florian's going to come out and push the pace and get this one in the second.
Yep. Florian, it reminds me, he's kind of like a snake as far as that goes. You know, he comes in there and he looks like a calm guy, and then he just comes out and he'll snatch you into submission and you're finished.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting fight.
Should be a great fight, yeah.
Yeah. Up next, we've got, now the next three fights are what makes the card. You've got, we'll start off with Rashad Evans and Tito Ortiz, which is just going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be redunculous, as they say.
Yes.
Wow. You know, one of the few undefeated fighters, you know, high up on the card, Rashad Evans at 10-0. I look at these two guys as kind of chips that are passing. You know, Evans is certain, his star is on the rise. I was not real impressed with him when I saw him back on The Ultimate Fighter, and it seems like every fight I watch him, he just seems to add a little something to his game. And he gets better and better and better and better and better.
Yep.
Ortiz, who was very active in 2006, and I didn't realize that was his most active year as a fighter. He had 4 fights.
Yep.
Has surely been trying to stay active. I just question whether or not he can dictate the pace to Evans in the way that he needs to win this fight. You know, Tito, I want to say Tito's kind of a one-trick pony at this point, where he's going to take you down, sit in your guard, and elbow you to death. And if you can avoid that and keep him off you, a la anybody that's beaten him recently, you're going to win the fight. And I think Evans has the tools to do that. I just don't see Ortiz really able to out-wrestle Evans, per se. Evans has an outstanding wrestling background.
Yep.
He's certainly shown he's got striking power and ability. He's implemented the kicking game well. I just, at this point, I think Evans has more tools than Ortiz and is going to win this fight. I'm not sure he's going to take Tito out, because I think Tito's got good staying power against anybody not named Liddell.
Yeah, very true.
But I think Evans is going to take it to him. I don't think he's going to get in the position where he's going to be dominated on the ground. I think if he does end up on the ground, he's going to be good enough to get out of it or, you know, get a rough stand-up. And I like Evans here to win this match. I have it going in a lopsided decision because I'm not sure that he can take Tito out all the way because the politics, here comes the Vince McMahon aspect of the story. I am wondering if Evans gets Tito in trouble, how soon the ref's going to jump in to stop it.
I wonder
if there isn't a little revenge factor here coming from Dana White. this may be me being a little, you know, out of my nut job,
sure.
screw loose aspect of the show, but you know, it makes you wonder. It's an intriguing backstory because I could see Evans getting enough shots in to get Tito in trouble. I'm not sure if he can finish Tito, but I'm wondering if he started finishing him, would the ref jump in early or wait a little while?
I hope that's not the case. You know, obviously you don't want to see that kind of thing happening, but you know. This is a fascinating fight for me because you've seen guys get in there with Ortiz. Who has out-wrestled Tito Ortiz? Randy Couture.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty much the list.
Yep.
You know, I guess you could make a case for Chuck Liddell since Ortiz couldn't keep him down. But, you know, as far as pure wrestling, guys that have out-wrestled Tito Ortiz, nobody has done it except for Randy Couture. And, you know, we all know Couture.
Mm-hmm.
So... This is such a huge litmus test for Rashad Evans to see where he is right now, because that was his bread and butter when he first came in. As you said, not a real entertaining fighter to start out with. He would take people down and kind of sit on them and drop a few shots, nothing much. But, man, has he improved with his stand-up. And, you know, I think his win over Jason Lambert is really what launched him. I mean, the highlight reel knockout over Salmon was obviously a good thing for him because he showed that he does have knockout power. But Salmon, you know, solid mid-level fighter that he is, he's not anywhere near the level of Ortiz. I don't think he's on the level of Jason Lambert either.
No, probably not.
But, you know, this is just a really, really interesting fight. And I have a hard time going against Tito Ortiz just because I don't know if Rashad can out-wrestle him.
Because you are an old-school fan, Sean. That is why. No, I'm telling you right now.
I'll admit it.
If you are an old-school fan, you are picking Tito Ortiz because what he has been in the past. Chuck Liddell hit it on the head. I'll tell you right now. The reason I'm going with Rashad, one of the reasons I'm going, you know, I have multiple reasons. One of the reasons is because Chuck Liddell said Tito doesn't like to get hit, and he doesn't. He doesn't like to get hit, and Rashad is going to hit him.
That was my next point, is that you see those fights with Liddell and with Couture to a certain extent. When he gets hit, he gets very angry and flustered and, you know, loses a little bit of composure.
Right.
And if Evans can do that on his feet, if he can stay on his feet and, you know, stop the takedowns and avoid those elbows on the ground, Evans has got an excellent shot of winning this fight.
It's a narrow odds fight. I mean, the odds on this fight are... narrow. I mean, Tito's a mild favorite. It's not quite a pick'em, but it's awful close.
Yeah, I would say it's as close to a pick'em as you're going to get because you've got, it's just like you said, two guys going kind of in opposite directions. I don't think Tito's falling quite as far as some people seem to think, but at the same time, I mean, you know, as far as Ortiz goes, he's a guy who beats almost anybody in the light heavyweight division not named Liddell. You know, he beats a lot of guys in the light heavyweight division.
Used to, Sean.
I don't know. I still think he's got it. But he
gutted out a win against Forrest Griffin, and he beat up an old Kem Shamrock twice last year.
Yeah. The Shamrock fights are a farce. But you know,
right? Well,
I know.
You got to look at the body of work. You know,
I know.
What is he now? I mean, on our polls, we've got him behind Evans. It's 9-10.
Yeah. I think it's premature to put him behind Evans right now, but I'm picking Evans for the fight. I am picking Evans. I have a hard time doing it, but I'm doing it because I had a hard time picking against Liddell, and I freaking lost because of that.
Come to the new school, Sean.
No,
you know,
Yeah, I think Evans has he's got the right tools to beat Ortiz.
Yep.
You know, I can definitely see Ortiz winning this fight if he can control Rashad Evans, but Rashad is such a big guy, and he's got good striking. If he can stop the takedowns, I think he's winning this fight. Even if he can't stop the takedowns, I think he's got a shot because, you know, who knows if he can sweep Ortiz, get him on his back. Ortiz does not want to be on his back.
Yep.
He doesn't want to be on his feet. He wants to be in that top position,
yep,
raining down elbows.
I think Evans can out-wrestle Tito, though. I mean, you're right. There are very few outside of Couture who have out-wrestled Tito. But I think Evans has the tools that he can – he certainly has the tools to do it.
Yeah. I agree that he does have the tools. I mean, he's got the size, too.
And I think he's got enough striking power to keep Tito honest.
Yeah.
I mean, the more I talk about this fight over and over and in my mind, the more I like Evans to win.
And that's what's making me go with Evans, is the more I think about it, the more I see Evans being able to dictate the pace. And dictate how the fight goes. You know, that having been said, Tito, he's a veteran. He's been in there with a lot of guys, and, you know, who knows what his game plan is. But at the same time, if his game plan isn't to take Rashad down and try and elbow him, he doesn't have much of a shot because, you know, he just doesn't have the striking power to take out Evans.
No, he's not going to stand a strike with Rashad. I think this is a coming out party for Rashad Evans. I think that, you know, Dana's kind of alluded to it, you know, back in The Ultimate Fighter, that there are two guys he underestimated in the history of the show, and one was Rashad Evans.
Yeah.
And I think it's very easy to underestimate Rashad Evans, and I think this is Rashad's coming out party. I think a win over Tito
Ortiz could be.
gets him right on the straight track up the ladder. I just, like I said, I'm not sure he can take Tito out per se. But I think he wins this one in a lopsided decision.
Yeah, I've also got him by decision. I could see him stopping Ortiz if he stops him on the feet. I don't see him stopping him on the ground.
No.
But if he can land a big enough shot and knock out Tito, I think he stops the fight. I mean, obviously, if he does that, he stops the fight. But, yeah, I do have Evans by decision. We seem to be agreeing a lot in this.
I noticed you copying my picks again.
Let's get on to the title fights. We've got Sean Sherk taking on Hermes Franca in the lightweight title fight. What do you got here?
I think this is going to be a pretty entertaining fight for, especially for a champion who seems to get no press. Sean Sherk has one of the most gaudy records in all of MMA. The guy is 31-2-1.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the two guys he's lost to have names Hughes and St. Pierre, and that's it.
Yeah.
He beat Kenny Florian decisively with a torn rotator cuff and a torn bicep. Now, I'm trying to think of a good analogy to how you fight 25 minutes against a top opponent with Sean Sherk's style, you know, mind you, with a torn rotator cuff and bicep, and it's got to be horrendously painful.
Yeah.
So the guy's been rehabbing, and now, you know, MMA's come full circle. He is the lightweight champion in arguably the most resurgent, exciting division in all of MMA. And he is the guy with the belt, and I think this is the moment that he has been waiting for all through rehab, probably for his entire career. And and he's going up against Hermes Franca, who is another guy who kind of gave up on the sport, got himself back together, has rattled off 8 wins in a row, and has as impressive a resume as most other guys in the lightweight division. And I guess, you know, from what I read, you know, in other forums, other sites, I guess he's just a really nice guy. from what I understand.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Sherk win this. I'd like to see Sherk win this just to give this guy a little due. You know, I think that whether he will win it is certainly up for debate. I think Franca brings a lot of tools to the game that, you know, will give Sherk quite a test. I like Sherk's endurance. I like his ability to control his opponents and impose his will with his wrestling.
Yeah.
I like Sherk's ability to ground and pound. I think that I see this going Sherk's way somewhere in the fourth round after 4 rounds of takedowns, middle shots, some elbows, and just finally an accumulation of blows, getting a stoppage somewhere in the fourth round. I just like his game a little more than Franca's. Franca is a highlight reel sort of guy. I think Sherk's a little too experienced to get caught up in that. And that's why I'm going with Sherk in this fight.
Yeah, Franca, You know, I think this is just a bad matchup for him. He's a good Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. He's a wild striker. He has those crazy angles that he takes on punches, like the one he caught Spencer Fisher with. Shirk's boxing is going to be more crisp. Maybe won't pack quite the punch that Franca's big overhand rights do, but it'll be more crisp. I think he'll be able to keep him at bay a little bit with his jabbing until he can set up his takedowns and pound out Franca. And I think you're definitely right about getting into the late rounds. Franca, I don't know how his conditioning is. Shirk is a machine. He can go all day and all night. He's in the league with Clay Guida, Tyson Griffin, those guys as far as conditioning goes. Franca just isn't. And I think, I don't even know that it gets into the fourth round, but it very well could. But I don't see it going to a decision because I just don't think Franca's going to be able to keep up with Shirk, especially if he's going to spend most of the night on his back like it looks like he probably will. Franca's comfortable fighting off of his back, but at the same time, I don't think he's going to be able to get one of Shirk's arms or legs. You know, he's got real short limbs, and he's so powerful. I mean, Shirk's so strong.
He's a tank. I mean, just looks built. He looks like a champion. You know, if you look at him, you think lightweight champion.
Yeah. You think like middleweight champion. But,
well, you think welterweight champion.
Yeah.
Outside of Couture and Sylvia, when's the last time we saw a championship bout get into the fourth round?
Jeez.
I mean, you got to go back to Sylvia Arlovsky?
Maybe.
I mean, just like,
well, I guess it was. When did Liddell knock out Ortiz? Was that the fourth round? Or is that the third round?
No, I thought that was the third, second or third.
Maybe. I can't remember.
You don't see
the championship rounds all that often.
No, you don't see the championship rounds that often. I think this one will make it. I think Franca's got enough in the gas, but I think he's got a lot of heart.
Yeah, he does.
And I think that. I'm sorry. I think that he's gonna, hang in long enough to, get to the fourth.
Yeah. It could even go to a decision, but I've got him losing by ground and pound in the third, just arbitrarily. But it very well could go to the fourth, fifth, or decision. Shirk he's just a terrible matchup for Franca for his style. So we agree there as well. Well, let's look at our main event: Anderson Silva versus Nate Marquardt for the middleweight title.
Finally, the end of the card, eh? I thought Travis Luter exposed Anderson Silva quite a bit, and with a little better conditioning, very well might be the current middleweight champion. I like Nate Marquardt a ton in this fight. He's got a lot of experience. He's been in big fights before. He's a former King of Pancras. Very cerebral fighter, comfortable on his feet, comfortable on the ground, good striking skills, can submit. I think Anderson Silva's chance to keep his belt is going to be trying to catch Marquardt with a big bomb. I don't see it happening. I see Marquardt getting this fight to the ground, getting by Silva's defense and getting a submission somewhere in the second. Truly, I think that there's a tough, tough matchup for Silva based on what I'm seeing out of Marquardt. I think he just brings all the tools. I think it's his time. I think this is just the right time and place for Marquardt to pick up the belt. And like I said, Silva's last performance, unless he's markedly improved his takedown defense and his ground defense, he's going to have a long night.
I think I'm of the opinion that the Luter fight was I don't want to say a fluke. I want to say it's overrated.
Anomaly.
The fact that I think Silva's ground game is better than that. He had knee surgery a little while before that on both knees, and still managed to pull off a triangle choke on Luter. I think that Silva's going to be able to stop Marquardt's takedowns for the most part. And imagine this for me, if you will. Silva stops a Marquardt takedown and grabs Marquardt's neck in a tie clinch. And tell me what happens from that point.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's possible. I mean, again, you're talking about a guy that has a huge resume, who has been in against guys of Silva's caliber, who has been in their ballpark before and has done quite well. I mean, he's 26-5-2. there's no question, you know, Silva wants to get him in the tie clinch and bang away. I don't think that I think Marquardt's a better fighter than Franklin in terms of getting out of those situations. Franklin, when he got caught in that, looked a little perplexed and actually tried to
defend Silva.
Now I think everybody knows, you know, if you find yourself in that situation, you got to reverse, get out of that situation instead of try to sit there and try to trade knees with Silva. So I think Marquardt is just too smart a fighter to get caught up in that. I'm sure there'll be points in the fight where it'll go that way, potentially, but I just think Marquardt's the better fighter all around right now, and I think that's what the middleweight division is looking at, is an all-around champion. I agree. Silva's ground game probably is not as bad as Luter made it look. Having said that, I think it has to be a lot better to hold off Marquardt.
Yeah, I can see this fight going going either way, really. I do have Silva winning it. What's that?
Holy God, a difference.
Yeah, no kidding. I think it will be won and lost in the clinch, be it the tie clinch, be it the Becker Roman clinch. You know, Marquardt is a strong guy. Silva is deceptively strong, I think.
Yep.
And he's a guy that he can hit you from so many angles, and from any one of those angles, he can knock you out. So I think he will end up getting the knockout. I think he's good enough on the ground to counteract Marquardt's ground game. And Marquardt is an excellent, excellent fighter, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he does have a shot at winning this. But I think Silva just presents a bad matchup for him because I think he'll be able to counteract Marquardt's strengths. You know, Marquardt's a good striker, but Silva's a better striker.
Mm-hmm.
Marquardt's good on the ground. I don't know if Silva's complete ground game is better than Marquardt's ground game, but I think it's good enough to nullify a lot of Marquardt's strengths. And that's why I've got Silva winning by knockout in, let's say the third round here.
What, are you just making this up as you go?
the round I did. I didn't know what I was going to say for that. But, I do have Silva. I've got Silva winning by TKO in the third.
Yeah, okay.
So there's your round.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what round you pick, because that's not going to happen. Anyway, no, I think it's going to cap off a great card. I think top to bottom, this is just going to be entertaining as all heck. I'm looking for. I can't think of any fight I'm not really looking forward to on this card.
I agree.
If I gotta get up and go to the John, I can miss this fight. There's just not one.
The only thing that worries me with this card, and it's nothing to do with the fights themselves. The only thing that worries me with this card is a lot of fights go into decision and we only get to see, you know, four fights or so. I hope that they plan on pacing this event to the point where we at least get to see the five fights that are scheduled. You know, the swing bout, we've usually always seen five fights on a UFC card.
Right.
But, you know, if the first four fights go to decision, or either if the first two fights go to decision, are they going to show that Kenny Florian fight, or are they going to go straight to the championship bouts? With them having two five-round fights planned for the night,
right.
I really hope that they're able to squeeze in at least the five fights.
Right. See, that's the thing. I mean, every other promotion, when you watch their shows, is two fights an hour. Minimum.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least on my, when I order the fight, they've got 4 hours of pay-per-view time.
Yeah.
Like 3:30 or 4 hours. Well,
yeah, 3.5 years, but I have.
I mean, I can't see where you can't get five fights in, at least.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah.
You know, I mean, granted two or, but I mean, as we already pointed out, the championship bouts never seem to go the distance.
Yeah.
Rarely.
Yeah.
I mean, not never. Rarely seem to go to the distance.
Yeah.
So to me, I would expect to see the five fights listed on the card and then, you know, catch a couple of the prelims.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
I hope that's what happens.
You know, we'll see, but, you know, that's the problem with UFC, I think, is that they just pace their events so slow. I don't want to see any stinking movie previews.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to. I mean, I'll take a little promo on 74, you know, as long as I don't have to see it 50 times that night.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, I want to see fight, post, you know, post-fight interview, refight for next fight, fighters walk in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, there is no excuse to have any commercial of any kind on a pay-per-view event that I'm paying $50 to see in high def.
Right.
You know, you've got the ads on the octagon floor. You've got the Mickey's replay. or what have you. You've got all that stuff. There's no need to see the latest preview for a horror movie or talk to that, talk to the star of that movie or get the celebrity picks. Nobody cares about the freaking celebrity picks.
Right.
Nobody wants to hear about them. That kind of thing. You know, save the hype for the fights coming up and the fights, coming up that night and coming up on later nights. But keep it with fighting,
Right.
There's no need for anything but fighting on a pay-per-view card. I think it's ridiculous that they wouldn't be able to fit a whole night of fights on 3.5 hours.
Yep. I mean, having all 9 fights with 2 title fights is a push. But
yeah.
to me, this should be a 7-fight card.
Yeah, I agree. I think every card should be a 7-fight card. Honestly.
3.5 hours, 7 fights.
Yeah.
Even with the 2 championship bouts, 7 fights. That would be that's where it should be for me. Tomorrow, I think the over-under is, I hate to say it, 5.
yeah. But I agree. I think there is a danger of them, not pacing it well and we only get to see 4 fights. If that's the case, I think that would be really a big misstep on their part. If you put on a card called Stacked and then show 4 fights, not even most of the fights on the card,
right,
you're opening yourself to a lot of criticism, and I think that would be a horrible idea for them to do.
Yep.
I think they really need to cut back on the commercials, cut back on the hype, and just show fights on this card.
I mean, they've been pimping this card for months.
Yeah, they really have.
I
understand that you've got 3 fights selling this card, and that's all well and good, but the card is not called. What's that?
Well, you do. Yeah, I mean, you do, but you don't. I mean, you got Nogueira debuting. I mean, I think they brought him out specifically to announce he was going to fight at this card.
Yeah.
But
honestly, though,
you're pimping half the card.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, though, is for guys like us. You know, we know who Nogueira is.
Yeah.
Even when you try them out on that on the pay-per-view, a lot of the casual fans that have seen that have forgotten it by now.
Yeah.
And they'll see him and they'll say, oh, yeah, that was that guy they brought out.
Yeah.
But, they're looking for Ortiz, Evans. They're looking for the 2 title fights. Everything else is kind of extra for them. But, why make your hardcore fan base angry and open yourself up to criticism when there's no need to, is what I think. So I hope that they show at least – I would like to see at least 6 fights on here.
Right.
But I hope that they at least get 5.
Yeah, beat this to death. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why have 9 fights on the stinking card?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
if you're only going to show 5 of them, then I got to go to On Demand and buy the other 4. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. And speaking of On Demand, I know I've been promising to get my reviews up of the fights. I had the prelims for UFC Fight Night 10 and UFC 72. I only recently, like a couple of days ago, got a chance to actually watch them. And if you didn't see them, you didn't miss anything, really, quite honestly.
And there you go.
There wasn't a whole lot going on there. I'm going to kind of leave it at that. But the only one remotely, worth kind of checking out was Nate Moore and Luke Caudillo. But even that one was, not great. It was fine.
Good to know.
But yeah. Yeah.
Good to know.
So, okay.
All right.
I think we pretty much exhausted all topics today.
Thank God.
Any parting shots, Jerry?
Only one to my good friend, Mr. Rawls, that I hope that belt's nice and shiny when I get it Sunday morning to become the first ever MMA Torch person to hold the prediction and or the betting title at once. So having said that, for both of you that are listening out there, I will post my soon-to-be championship-winning picks and Randy's zone on our message board, so do check that out. And I'll have that up there hopefully later tonight, where I'll post my wisdom.
All right.
Enough parting shots there. You can't drive your car.
Excellent. I am going to – for me, I've got Leia Land coming out on Monday. I haven't decided whether I'll do middleweight or lightweight. It'll probably depend on which one I did last, which I can't remember. Which division is more intriguing to me at the moment. So we'll see what happens there. It'll be lay of the land for the next 2 weeks. After that, I'll continue the manifesto. I'm not going to make any promises. I'm going to try and update my blog a little more regularly. I always have good intentions to get on there and give my thoughts about little this and that, but sometimes just don't get around to it. So I'm going to try and rededicate myself to the Ennis blog as well as the manifesto. So, but other than that, give us a shout on the forums. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you think. Ask us questions if you'd like. We will do our best to answer them. Coming up after UFC 73, we do have the roundtable with myself, Jerry Cataline, and Mike Jarslick. And you did volunteer for that, right?
I did.
Okay, good. That's what I thought.
I'll be boasting about my new belt.
Yes.
Hopefully.
You got it from the horse's mouth, ladies and gentlemen. So keep an eye out for that on Saturday night. And as a side note, you may have noticed that the podcasts haven't been up quite as soon as they were before. What's happening is, I send these in to Wade Keller, our editor, when I'm done with them, and, with the Chris Benoit war going on, he's not been able to post them quite as fast as he would like. So that's why they've been a little bit delayed lately. Hopefully we'll get this one and the roundtable up promptly. We'll see how that goes with the holiday week and everything. I hope you all had a pleasant Independence Day. Jerry, thanks for being on the show.
Good to be here, brother. Thank you again.
And we will hear from you on Saturday. Perhaps we'll see a new book. Go.
Yeah.
And until then, I'm Sean Edith. Cataline, thanks for listening.
Here we go. Hot damn, I should have felt the groove like I was swimming in a sea of soul. The sun was rising.